Hello and welcome to this Global Situation podcast from International SOS, the leading health and security risk services company. I'm Chris Giles. Well, in this episode, we'll be speaking to Taran Nidja, our lead security analyst for Central Africa, who's recently returned from his country assessment trip to both Rwanda and Burundi. And I started by asking Taran about what places he visited as part of his itinerary.
So I spent roughly around, I'd say, 2.5 days in Rwanda's capital, Kigali, first, and then a little bit of time in the northwest of the country, so around Gisenyi. It's actually quite close to where a lot of the tourism is located. And then I had planned to return to Kigali and drive down to Bujumbura. Unfortunately, these plans were actually scuppered by Burundi's decision to close the border amid tensions with Rwanda, which is something we'll get to later. So I ended up flying to Bujumbura instead, which is where I then spent a further 3 days.
So Taran, tell me more about the aim of your trip.
Sure. So, I mean, these trips, you know, they're regularly scheduled. And the aim of them, I mean, is two-pronged, really. So on the information analysis side, we meet with a range of security experts from governmental, private, non-profit organizations, primarily with the intention of getting what we hope to be a more granular understanding of the current security and political situation. Basically, we're just ground-truthing the assessment that we already have. And then on the assistance side, so we'd be meeting with security partners, vetting hotels, and then finally trying and testing evacuation routes.
And on that final point, tell me more about the route that you decided to assess.
So I actually think just before answering that question, it's worth flagging, you know, how we choose that route. So I mean, ultimately, we assess Rwanda to be a low-risk country. There's low rates of crime. There's not many protests. There's not really any terrorist actors. So the need for us to evacuate anyone from Kigali or otherwise due to a decline in the security environment is pretty low. So what we did is we zoomed out a little bit. We looked to the west, specifically to the border with Congo DRC, and the ongoing developments as relate to the M23 rebels encircling of Goma. And we were already aware, actually, of the fact that should we need to evacuate people out of Goma, the quickest and safest option would be to cross over into Gisenyi and then to be driven to Kigali. So that was the route I assessed, Kigali to Gisenyi and then back.
So Taran, what were your findings along that route?
The first thing I'd say, you know, very good road conditions. They were paved all the way, hardly any potholes. And then also the driving standards are pretty high, again, differentiating it somewhat to a lot of other countries across the continent. I would say that a lot of this is probably due to the very hefty speeding fines you can receive. There were lots of police sitting by the side of the road with speed guns, and it really, really did keep my driver in check in terms of keeping well within the speeding limit. That being said, there are a lot of cyclists along the route, hauling goods between towns, livestock. All of that made it a little bit problematic in terms of getting up some hills and down some hills, especially given the winding nature of the roads. And I did actually see a couple of cars and lorries that had unfortunately gone off the side of a hill.
So based on what you saw and having completed that journey, what would your advice be to anyone who's looking to do the same road movement?
First and foremost, I'd say if you're unfamiliar with slightly more hazardous driving conditions, definitely book a car and a driver from a reputable company. This is something we can help with. And it doesn't need to be a security company or necessarily a security trained driver. A reputable logistics provider should suffice. And the second point I would have is to avoid all travel at night. I spoke with my driver who heavily advised against it. He said the route is quite poorly lit and due to the climate, there's often rainfall that makes it all the more dangerous. And then this would lead me into my final point, which would be to definitely check the weather forecast and the status of roads. There has been some really bad flooding in the area in the past 12 months. About 100 people actually died last year due to flash floods. But yeah, I'd say if you follow these three things, the route should be quite easy and actually enjoyable.
So Taran, earlier you mentioned the conflict in the east of Congo DRC. And perhaps you could speak a little bit about your findings with regards to developments in the wider region, which I understand has been heating up a little bit recently.
I think it's important just to briefly contextualize things a little bit. So the east of the DRC has basically been overrun by more than 100 armed groups for several years. And much of this insecurity goes back to the Congo wars in the late 90s and the early 2000s. But the one group most people are currently monitoring is a group known as the M23 movement. And it's not the first time they've come onto the international stage. They actually managed to storm through North Kivu just over 10 years ago and briefly capture the provincial capital, Goma. Then after almost, I'd say, a decade of relative silence, they sprang back up in 2021. They've taken large parts of North Kivu and done a very good job in surrounding Goma and a lot of the key routes to the city.
But this issue includes a lot of other actors too, right?
Exactly. So one thing to be aware of is that M23 has been accused in recent years of receiving a lot of military and logistical support from Rwanda and their armed forces. Frankly, I mean, these accusations are all but confirmed by several reports, including from the UN, as well as from conversations I had with those I met in the region. For their part, the DRC authorities, they've been actively calling out Rwanda's involvement for years. And in fact, there were the elections last December in 2023, the Congolese president, Tshisekedi, even mentioned the possibility of going to war with the easterly neighbor. And then just to add more layers to this, you now have the deployment of troops from the Southern African Development Community who are actively engaged in the conflict, as well as reports, you know, again confirmed during my meetings in Bujumbura, that Burundian troops are actually fighting alongside Congolese forces. So the situation we're faced with now is essentially a significantly violent proxy war in which the DRC, Rwanda, Burundi, and external forces are involved.
And Taran, while you were in the region, what did you learn in terms of there being any further escalation and broader regional conflict? What do you think the chances are of this?
So I'd say the majority of people I spoke with broadly aligned with our assessment, which is that a wider war is unlikely at this time. I mean, quite simply, it's not in anyone's benefit to get caught up in something like that. If we think about Rwanda, they're really pushing themselves on the international stage as a safe haven amid a slightly unstable region. And they want to continue to ensure that their very lucrative tourism industry continues to receive the amount of visitors it's hoping for. And then beyond this, I mean, the Rwandan armed forces and M23 rebels, they have control over a large part of North Kivu, within which there's an abundance of natural resources. So it really doesn't make sense for them to push the conflict into something bigger. You know, financially, they're doing pretty well with the situation as it is. And then if we look to the DRC and Tshisekedi, despite the strong rhetoric they put out, it's also unlikely that they'll want to have to fight a broader war. The east of the country, like I said, is already an absolute quagmire. We rate the majority of it as extreme risk. So for them, it also doesn't make much sense to go to war, especially with a foreign power such as Rwanda's, which has a really well-trained and powerful army. And then finally, the third state actor in this region, if we think about Burundi, it makes even less sense for them. You know, I could really tell from my time in Bujumbura and with the people I met there that the economy is in a pretty dire state. Just generally, the country has failed to really recover from the 2015 crisis. And as opposed to Rwanda, their army does not have the experience or capabilities to engage well in a full-on war.
Okay, and returning to Rwanda now, and there are elections coming up in mid-July. What should we expect?
Sure, so I spoke to quite a few people about this, and the bottom line is that Kagame is expected to win again. So we're not expecting there to be, you know, unrest, protests. That's very unlikely, and everything should pass off business as usual. It's a very, very controlled security environment, and there is no expectation at this point of, I guess, anything untoward happening. That being said, Kagame has ruled the country since 1994, and a few days ago, on the 9th of March, he was confirmed once again as a presidential candidate. You know, if we look more broadly, a lot of countries across the continent, there has been a trend of long-standing leaders being upended by internal forces. So any organizations with workforce in Rwanda or planning travel to the country, they should definitely make sure they have some sort of escalation plans in place, as well as clear lines of communication, both in advance of the election, during and after.
So finally, Taran, are there any other things that we should consider with regards to Rwanda or Burundi that you learnt during your country assessment trip?
I think the main thing I'd want to say is that although I guess Rwanda and to a lesser extent Burundi have been somewhat stable in recent times, if you do have travel to or business in the region, you should not take your eye off them. You know, from what I gathered, and despite some of the PR that's put out, economically speaking, the majority of people are still really struggling. A bit of a stifled truth, if I'm being honest. You know, Rwanda, like I said earlier, it does obviously have a lucrative tourism industry, but a lot of that, the money, it's not really filtering down to a local level. In Burundi, the tourism industry is non-existent. I mean, I flew in from Kigali to Bujumbura. It's an absolutely beautiful country, but unfortunately, a lot of the trees have been cut down. There's no wildlife. So there's no opportunities in that sector. And then I also heard, unfortunately, a lot of stories of corruption, particularly in the construction sector. And in some conversations, it was possible to ascertain that there is a certain level of discontent. But at this point, we don't assess it likely that it will erupt into widespread unrest, at least in the short to medium term. That being said, it's still worth keeping a close eye on both of the countries in the coming months.
Okay, Taryn, thanks so much for all your analysis and advice.
Well, that's all for now, but just a reminder that you'll be able to access all the latest information and updates about Rwanda or Burundi from our website at internationalsos.com. And from there, you can find out about our global network of assistance centres. They're available to clients 24/7. But until next time, thanks very much for listening and goodbye.